Okay, here we go.
Call. It's like 7:01.
Okay. I call the June 4th, 2019 Committee of the Whole meeting of the Glencoe Park District to order. Lisa, please call the roll and note the time.
7:01. Member Boren?
Yes.
Member Kobe?
Yes.
Member Ludden?
Yes.
Member Underdunk?
Yes.
Chair Brooks?
Yes. Okay, there is no one from the public in attendance, so we can move on to our discussion on current and potential future debt for the district. Carol Mensinger will introduce Eric Anderson and lead the discussion. Carol.
Well, I'd like to introduce Eric and John from Pepper Jaffray. They have been with the district since 2014. I believe when we went through the RFP process and chose their firm and have been working with Eric. Since then, they were the ones that handled the refunding of our bonds. And so as we're looking for the Watts debt to fall off, as we've talked quite a bit over the last year and a half, we want to make sure that everybody's on the same page about what current debt we have and what it might look like should the board decide to approve issuance of non-referendum debt moving forward. So I'll turn it over to you, Eric.
Great. Thank you, Carol. Good evening, everybody. Okay. I've wanted to make this a little bit of an educational session and then a little bit more about some potential options for you. As always, though, when you have questions, please feel free to interrupt, and we'll do our best to either address it or, you know, refer you to a slide that's coming up in the pack. So on page two, we won't talk too much about this, but we're going to use some terms today. Levy, you're familiar with levy. That's the property taxes that are applied to all of the real property in the district. It's primarily residential in nature. You are tax capped, and you have been since 1994. That is a law that went into Cook County at that point in time. Your tax rate is a calculation that results from your equalized assessed valuation as well as what you choose to levy. And so it's levy divided by EAV, essentially. And your EAV is the amount that all of the properties in the district equal to after applying several factors. And in Cook County, it's a lot more difficult. There's a lot more calculation than in the collar counties. It varies every year. In fact, you're in the process right now of being reassessed. Mm-hmm. So you'll probably see those
coming.
I saw some ashen white faces, so I guess they've already come. Yeah. The good news about that, though, however, is that if your home was reassessed at up 20%, as was your neighbors, people across the street and down the way, your tax bill really isn't going to change. Because you'll get a little bit more of what we call the majors, like Cook County itself, Metsani, that's probably about it. But for all of the other taxes, because all of the boats were lifted in that tide, your relative tax bill will remain the same.
Does that mean the EAV went up, but the tax rate would go down?
Tax rate would go down.
Same amount of money?
Yes. Approximately. So you're getting reassessed while somebody that also might be covered by Metsani isn't getting reassessed?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're going to pay less than you because you're bearing a little bit more of that burden. But overall, you know, since we're talking about water here a lot today with rain and such, that tide lifts all the boats, everybody's still equally assessed. Limited tax bonds and unlimited tax bonds, you have both of those that are outstanding currently. Unlimited tax bonds are taxes that are unlimited as to both rate and amount. And why is that? Well, because they've been approved by the voters. It's a practical matter, of course, you're directing how much the amount is, and the rate is just calculated. But literally, you could have chose when this building was approved by referendum, you could have elected to have paid it off in 1 year. Because that's what the unlimited feature means, more or less. As opposed to limited tax bonds, which are set based on the amount that was levied for non-referendum bonds in 1994. So that amount became your amount going forward. And it's a fairly modest amount. Beginning in levy year 2009, that then had the CPI factor applied to it. So it goes up each year now by the value of whatever CPI is. For next year, it's 1.9%. We're in a 2.1 year this year. On average, it's right around at that 2% mark. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. Prior to issuing any non-referendum bonds, you need to engage both the calling for and conducting of what's called a BINA hearing, Bond Issuance Notification Act. And it's just part of what went in 1994 when tax caps were installed. It's a way of communicating to the public that you're here to consider an increase by issuance of non-referendum bonds. So we'll come back to these a little bit, but just wanted to get those out there. Page 3, your calendar year, fiscal year, and levy year, the way that they all lined up together, they don't. However, you know, take a look at that. The BP, which is the bond payment dates that you have, and they all fall within each one of those bars, and those bars dictate the calendar, fiscal, and levy year. It's very customary for these not to line up. So when we talk, though, about your finances, we're always going to talk in levy year. And so that levy year really is from April through the succeeding March. And then finally, this particular part of the definitions, you file your taxes typically in November. You have up until the fourth Tuesday in December. And then for any of your bond and interest levies, there's actually an exclusion. You can levy that all the way up till the last day of February. So, and impact that levy year that you're in. At that point, you're in the levy year and the same calendar year. I know it's a little odd, but anyway. So a quick interest rate snapshot. And boy, this is actually stale, believe it or not, and was produced just last week. So rates have absolutely fallen off of a cliff since November of last year. In November, the Fed said they were looking at about 3, maybe 4 more increases in 2019 leading into 2020. What's wound up happening is now, the Fed, in fact today, the chairman said we'll do whatever it takes to keep the economic expansion going, and the market is assuming that we're going to have 2 cuts this year now. So what a difference just a quick 7 months makes. And we've seen a full 1-point decrease in the 10-year treasury rate since that point in time. Very, very unnerving for some. But if you're in the mode of issuing bonds potentially, it's a good time. So let's talk about the bonds that you have outstanding, which is shown on page number 5. You've got a couple of bonds outstanding, and one is rapidly approaching its final maturity date. The 2010s are non-referendum bonds, so that was approved back then as an addition. Carol, it was for this facility, right?
2010 was actually for the Watts. We refunded
for
the Watts debt.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. And the 2015 series was to refund the bonds that were approved by referendum in 2006. Notice that the 2010s, if you take a look at the notes section, those are non-callable, whereas the 2015s have a call provision attached to it, and I actually have that on a different slide, so I believe that's upcoming here a little bit. You still have about $6.5 million remaining on the debt.
Sorry, when you say these are refunded from the original issuance, what does that exactly mean? This is just a bond that you rolled over, essentially?
They were callable,
yeah.
And so we refunded because we could get a lower interest rate, yeah, so and save on the interest cost.
Yeah.
Right, we saved in excess of $800,000.
In interest over the period?
Which, because the authority originally came from taxpayers, mm-hmm, it had to go back to the taxpayers. So all the taxpayers got lower a lower bond interest levy as a result of the refunding.
What was that 2006 referendum for?
This building.
For taking?
Yeah.
So I know I've talked about rates being low. Well, they're as low as they can get for you because you are rated AAA, which is the highest rating that is afforded bonds by Moody's Investor Service. Down below on page 5, we just show from 2000 till now, you've had three increases in your bond rating. And you are the smallest park district in Illinois, and we believe the nation, to be rated AAA. So, what does that mean? Well, that means that you have uncontrollable features to the district, which are your demographics primarily. Those are very strong. But then the monies that are entrusted to the board by the taxpayers, you're prudently managing to the point at which you earn the AAA rating. So.
I think they're managing it.
Because if things go bad, we're not taking it.
Collectively, the team. So, any questions about your bond rating?
Just a question on the 2015 bond. So, we haven't paid out that much in 3.5 years. So, Bob, how much are we paying each year on that?
On the 2015s,
we have 6 years left, so.
Yeah, about $1 million a year.
Yeah.
It's a level debt service, and actually that's shown to you on page number
11. Which is fixed debt service.
Right. So 11 shows you total debt service. So that's going to be both principal and interest. Mm-hmm. And we're right there at that million and change mark. Page number 6 talks about debt limits. So, you are not a home rule unit of government. Only municipalities that have more than 25,000, they have to be the village, not the park district, are treated with home rule authority. They don't have a debt limit. You do. And we have two debt limits that are applicable. One is the total debt limit, that's 2.875% of your EAV. We show that on the far right-hand side. But the one that we're going to concentrate on tonight is the non-referendum, which is an odd number. It's 0.575% of your EAV, less any debt that's outstanding currently. We know we're in Cook County. We have yet to receive our EAV for this year, but when we do, let's just assume it goes up, you'll have additional bonding authority. And if it goes down, you'll have lesser. And we've seen both in the last, in the last decade. We've gone up and down on that. By the way, if the bonds are outstanding and an EAV were to go down and you have a negative bond debt limit, that's not a big deal. It just means you can't issue any more until you go positive. But it's not as if there's any kind of action that would have to be taken. I had that question a couple of weeks ago. I thought it was a good one. But, so, any questions about your legal debt margin calculations? All right, so right now, $5,166,000 is the limit that the board could avail itself from. However, we have another test, and that test is shown on the next page, which is your debt service extension base. So remember before we talked about in 1994, this happened to be $228,710 was your, what we call the base at that point. That means in any one levy year, you could not have a principal and interest levy that went above that value. Beginning in 2009, that then was amended, so that CPI growth was applied, and so you've grown now from $228,000 to a new base this year, levy year 18, which is the year that we're in, of $268,000 and change. We already know next year's value because it relates to last year's CPI. So going forward, we're working with a value now of $273,586. And that will go up each year. Now, there has been some legislation advanced in Springfield that says we're subject to tax freezes. There's been 37 bills presented. None have gotten to the point at which, I mean, we've been concerned about it for sure.
Yeah.
But none have gotten to the point at which they're going to have the governor's signature. So can't always assume, however, that we're going to enjoy that CPI factor.
Eric, this debt service extension based on the numbers you're talking about, for example, the $273,000 at the bottom right of the table, that's the maximum amount that our P&I payment can be for a year. That's not the maximum amount of debt we can carry.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Okay. Both are correct. Okay. You could have more debt that's due that year. However, the county clerk will only extend the $273,586.
Okay.
So if your payment was $400,000, you'd have to come up with the balance.
Okay.
So then we take a look at, well, what is available? Because anything that is already issued and levied counts against that. Well, remember we started off the conversation by saying we just have a couple of more years left on the 2010s. So we're in levy year 2018 again, and levy year 19 shows you've consumed about half of that payment. I show NA for levy year 18 because that deadline is passed. So you couldn't obtain any of those dollars even if you wished. However, levy year 19, you have about half remaining, and then thereafter, you have your full complement available. So in terms of your ability, we've used a 2% increase here, by the way, in assuming what CPI might be in the future to produce this schedule. If that were to be the case, you'd have about $7 million over the next 20 years, principal and interest, that you could service, and that's using numbers from today, essentially. And just the point below, average is 2.2, however, the last 10 years, it's only been 1.8. We had a 0.1 thrown in there, that doesn't help. And we had a couple of years below 1, and that certainly didn't help either. And that's where staff has to make lemonade out of lemons, pretty much, right?
Yep.
A question. That number is different from the one we've been using on some of our other calculations. We've been using the Chicago CPI.
No. It's the county. It's no, we haven't.
It's the county?
Yeah.
I thought while we were basing our increases, we were using a Chicago area CPI and not the national.
No. It comes through the county, and then we also determine an amount that we build in for probable growth, which is very conservative, mm-hmm. and that's how we determine what our levy increase is. But we always use what's from the county.
Okay.
This is actually, the reference here is CPI-U, which comes from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and it winds up being the official CPI, how Social Security payments are calculated, and here, your ability to raise taxes.
I literally call the county every year before I start the levy preparation just to make sure what that CPI figure is.
It just seems different to me than what we were doing when we were talking about salaries, but then it's different.
Oh, it's
discussion.
A completely different discussion, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, okay, yeah.
Page 9 is just a real quick history of CPI since tax caps were installed. Notice that actually the maximum, by the way, is how tax caps read is it's a minimum of 0 and a maximum of 5%. Well, we haven't come up with the 5% yet. In fact, real quick story, in levy year 2008, in July, we were at 5.7%. That's how inflation was running year over year at that point. We thought, gosh, we're going to go above 5 for the first time. Look where we wound up, 0.1.
Yeah, but that was oil-driven, right?
It was, I think, prices everywhere were
yeah,
starting
I think
to
that
crash.
Was the,
yeah.
the
so,
oil prices.
Everything.
Right. So on page 10, then, one of the most boring graphs we'll ever see, but boring is good. And why is boring good here? It's because it says you have lots of availability if you choose to access it. So that solid line, the bars, by the way, are your debt service that's existing. The solid line is what we know today. If CPI were to never change again, or legislation said, hey, we're going to freeze it, that's where you're at. The dashed line is the assumed growth at 2%. And so those are your reference points. I have some clients that like to push it a little bit, and others that like to say, you know what, we're just going to stay right where the maximums are today. There's no right answer. It's how you feel comfortable in managing that risk part of your portfolio, because above the debt portfolio, if you assume too much CPI and it doesn't come through, you have to make up that payment from your general fund. We go to page 11, and this is your debt just shown to you a little bit differently. One of the really nice attributes, though, is that all of your debt is retired in 7 years. So we talked about, you know, the characteristics that earned you the AAA rating. This is one of them. You have a very, very prompt debt profile in terms of it being paid. And then from the taxpayer perspective on page 12, we're using an $800,000 home here. We're assuming they also get the homeowner's exemption. And just for the bond portion, this is how the taxes line up, and we assume that that EAV, it remains stagnant going forward. So this chart's wrong, but it gives you a kind of a good roadmap for what that taxpayer might be expecting here in the future. Notice in 2025, that biggest bar, the blue bar, which is your referendum bonds, will drop off. And so come levy year 2025, you're going to have a substantial decrease in your overall levy, assuming that you don't ask any further questions of the voters.
This chart is as simple as it looks. It's $257 in taxes on an $800,000 home just to pay off the debt.
Right. Yeah, and again, it's assuming a static environment moving forward, both in the value of the home and the value of the district. And we know that's incorrect. But as we talked about before, if everything right increases at the same rate, it would be about this number, yes.
This is assuming we don't done the bonds, because the orange only goes through 19.
That's right. So we've isolated in this part of the discussion, we're just isolating that blue bar, because that we know is going to drop off. Mm-hmm. However, to your point, if you do access non-referendum bonds, there's going to be some orange that gets filled in mm-hmm. in that bottom piece. Yes. Mm-hmm. So we use the orange down at the bottom because we're capped there. And so that's kind of, it's hard to see here, but it's trying to reflect that that's a capped levy and the corresponding taxes that get produced from it. So we had in 2017, we had some action that was taken up, the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. The only thing we want to talk about here, and this is, I'll close the circle on the refunding piece. So those 2015 bonds, they're callable beginning on 12-1 of 22. Because the laws changed, we can only refund those on a tax-exempt basis beginning September the 3rd of 2022 and on any date thereafter. The 2010s, we don't have the ability to do any refunding. So really the point of this is, yes, we have some flexibility coming up. We don't know what rates will be in 2022, so we'll just continue to monitor that. But the point about this slide is when you issue debt, it's even more important now to really like the structure.
Yeah.
Because you have to wait until that call date to touch it on an efficient basis. Otherwise, you have to refund it using taxable rates of interest, which are, right now, they're about 90 or so basis points, or almost 1% higher than tax-exempt rates. So a more costly form of capital, so if we don't have to do it that way, it just goes back to when you touch your money, you always want to feel good about it, but now even more so. All right, so that's the kind of the history and some terminology. Take a break here for any of your questions as we move forward and...
Yeah, so the... can you explain one more time why the 2015 bond can't be called before 2022? Is that a covenant inside the bond itself, or is that if it's something that we did to ourselves, or is that like a statutory or regulatory obligation that we have?
It is the call. It's called an optional redemption.
Yeah.
It's a one way.
Yep.
You can only do it. It cannot be done to you. It can't be put to you. And so back in 2015, we traditionally you'd have about it. You were used to having 10-year calls.
Yep.
And we said, you know what, we can get a little bit more aggressive on this.
7-year.
Your rate.
Yep.
Your rating, I should say.
Yep.
At that time it was AA1. And so we pushed it and had a 7-year call.
That's something that
we did to ourselves.
We did to ourselves. It's not a right. So if we were to issue not that we're going to, but if we were to move into the market today for a bond, we could still determine whether we want 7, 10 years, and it would be priced accordingly.
Correct.
Okay.
Anything further? Carol, any lead-in on this next slide?
No, I think, this basically summarizes this schedule that we put together. Mm-hmm. And so this does not include any of potential bonding money, and it also does not include the potential for the sale of any house that we have. So then you're moving into the schedule that he summarized very well, both showing those in fiscal year, this fiscal year, okay? So I want to just preface it that. That's why the difference in the numbers more as you look towards the bottom, where we're going to look very sparse, really, after this current year. It kind of extends it out, but again, you're still noticing the red at the end of the chart.
So the red is with an additional.
Correct.
Issuance.
Yep.
It goes red in 2022. Sorry, 2021 otherwise.
But these are, these projects are all quote unquote optional. We're deciding to do these projects and. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we're having this discussion today or not, but about which projects to do.
No, we're not.
No, not today.
We're kind of laying the groundwork because
would have been surprising.
There are projects that are not in here as well. So I mean, this is what was as of March 2019.
Correct.
So there are projects such as Watts that are not in here that we know is right around the corner as well.
Mm-hmm. So it's good information that.
We still have to discuss.
We still have some priorities to
exactly.
Right.
But the sort of headline is really the 3.875, which is more explained on page 15, which is that's how much debt.
Correct.
Do you think we can sort of conservatively issue within that the caps that you described there?
Yes, and it also assumes that you're doing a longer term issuance that would then consume a good 20 years of a majority of the coming 20-year abilities.
Okay.
So notice on page 14, spent a lot of time on the inflows and just one line on the outflows, right? Carol's got the supporting part of the outflows. I wanted to concentrate on the inflows because that's really important. Obviously, the biggest number on the page is the bond issuance number, but there are other features in here that are important to recognize, the ADA levies being one of them. And then your contributions from the REC and corporate fund on an annual basis. One of the nice things about Glencoe, and back again about how you got the AAA, is you've done a really nice job of balancing what's called pay-as-you-go and pay-as-you-use. Pay-as-you-go comes from the dollars that are created each year from your REC and corporate fund, excess of revenues over expenditures, that you then redeploy for capital projects. Pay-as-you-go, or pay-as-you-use rather, is bonds. And so, what I found is that well-performing, high-performing park districts do a nice job in managing both and say every year, hey, you know what? We're not going to issue bonds for everything. We're going to pay for it out of our own cash, and then occasionally, when we need to, we'll issue bonds.
Yeah.
So the difference in the REC and CORP funds here, why does it go down so much from 2021 to 22?
because typically you're not seeing the amount of 1.5. I mean, that's something that, for a variety of reasons, we did better with not expending certain contingency expenses, not paying for 8 staff who did not have family insurance. We did better at the beach. You know, we budget to deficit at 80,000 and we made 60,000 this year.
So this is very conservative, because you're saying with all those factors that could still occur, but you've taken it way down because of that.
The 1.5 is, and it's probably more a discussion for the audit that just got finalized that I can go into more, but it's very determined by our operations, and I am conservative. Even bringing that 1.5, we're right around 55 for recreation and probably 59 for corporate. And again, the two reasons why we probably held off was the minimum wage increase, which now is a known. And we're seeing it, and we're seeing it, and that's going to make the monies available probably not so available. And then the property tax freeze, which not only from a bond perspective, but then we're limited. There's going to be no increase in any of our tax dollars. So it's a double whammy, and that's why, I've been conservative.
In addition to, she just mentioned, 8 staff didn't take insurance. We just had a wave of retirements, then we have a wave of younger staff. We don't know if they're 25, they're in turn 26, they can't be out of their parents' insurance, and all of a sudden all 8 of those come back. We just had teacher have a baby. That could be a wave of that, where all of a sudden we go from no coverage at all to single, and the next year to family. So those, and there was just a gasoline tax put on there. That affects us too. As far as staff that come from all over, will that affect our wages that we have to pay? So we have, not only do we have minimum wage, we have to look at that gas tax. If we have people coming from all over, we're going to have to figure that into our calculation, how much we pay so that we get those quality staff. So it's all those things that weren't in effect last year that in the future are definitely, minimum wage is definitely hitting us.
I mean, it's not uncommon to be conservative, you know, in any 5-year plan. You're going to have your 3, 4, and 5 be sort of your worst case scenario. So I think I don't have a huge problem with that. But I do think, you know, from what you were saying, seeing us go from green to red in a pretty abrupt manner is of, even with a $3.8 million bond, is a literal red flag. That is something that just needs to probably not necessarily today, but just needs to be reviewed, because it
I mean, and you look at what those larger projects is as we hit that red mark, and be honest, there's a reason why we haven't done the park maintenance garage.
Yeah.
Is that time and time again, what do we look to keep cutting it? And eventually we can.
Yeah.
I mean
I think we're gonna have some pretty, it sounds like we're gonna have some pretty tough decisions on, you know, what our priorities are. But my question for you guys is that anytime you hire someone from outside counsel, one of the benefits that you get is to understand and benchmark where you sit versus others. And the beauty is here, you have a really easily publicly known way to benchmark, which is your rating. Do you have, or are you allowed to share, is this fairly typical of what AAA bond rating entities have their capital expenses look like, or is this sort of an outlier to you?
Well,
are we an outlier?
So we represent 8 of the 10 park districts in Illinois that are AAA rated. And you have some very large park districts that are like Naperville Park District, $8 billion of EAV. You're almost one.
We're one, right?
So big difference there.
Not bad, because we have more than one. We have less than 1/8 the people.
That's
so
yeah, no
math
boy.
Actually works out okay.
but to your point, everybody has a unique where they are in their growth curves, in their replacement curves, and other challenges that they might be facing, and opportunities at the same time. I can tell you that many of these park districts are beginning that cycle of, now we have to reinvest again.
Okay.
And so we're seeing a lot more of going red. And to Carol's point, you know, whether this, how conservative is this? Well, we know when we get there.
Yeah, right.
Right? We think it's conservative today, and hopefully it's way conservative. You know, we generally try to look certainly 3 years out to start for those warning signs, and then five.
Right.
So we could do some additional benchmarking, though.
I'm not asking for additional work. I just didn't know if,
no, we're
if that was something that you guys, that as a new person on the board,
sure.
To me, you know, in isolation, it's hard to understand if this is where the market is. And benchmarking gives us an idea of, you know, and if we're going to have to go up to citizens and ask for certain things, we need to have that. Mm-hmm. Hey, look, this is hitting all park districts. It's not just hitting us. So.
We've been looking at this for 2 years, and when we look at this sheet that Carol was holding up, that makes us very nervous too. So your anchor company,
perfect.
It's a lot of different things that we're looking at, and it's not like we think we were going to do all those.
No, no, I
think it's really important to add, Stephanie, that, and I think it's just human nature when we've got a 5 or 6 year plan like this, and we, you know, everybody knows we're going to have to make tough calls and prioritizations, but it's really socially easier as a group here to say, we're just going to keep all those projects on the list rather than tell Dudley that we're not doing this project. Right?
Yeah.
So that's
very true.
We probably won't end up.
Yeah. Yeah. We say no to
we'll just tell you that to your face.
Let's have our next meeting back.
You know, we've been in a period of reinvestment, so we're not looking towards it. Since I've been here, that's what we've been doing.
So, 6 years.
Mm-hmm. I will say the one area where I say we are not conservative, although it's very small, is the asset disposition. I think that's a liberal estimate.
Yeah.
So I would say that would be probably, I'd be looking more like three. But that's, I mean, it's a drop in the bucket overall, but that's what I would say.
Carol, just with respect to the, I'm sorry, Dudley, just with respect to the timing, I've spent my whole career in business, but I never can wrap my head around fiscal years, and now you've added that third.
Yeah, this is so irritating.
Made me want to leave. So this is fiscal year ending 20.
We just finished fiscal year ending February 28th, 2019. So that was the 18-19th fiscal year, but it's 2017 tax year. So we're now in 2018 tax year, which is fiscal year 19-20. It always kind of goes in order.
So the 1.5 million number that
is going to get transferred in. It's from.
We already. So that number is based on things that we already know, that we've already discussed.
The audited, the audited balances?
So this
balances?
Is not some,
no.
See, I like, to me, 2 years from now is like the distant future. So how could you possibly know?
Mm-hmm. So it is based on the fiscal year we just closed, and next meeting is going to be the proposed resolution to say, hey, this is what I'm recommending to transfer to Fund 69.
Got it.
So that's their legitimate numbers.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. A question I had. The former director's house, where does that fit into all this?
That's an asset disposition.
That number seems a little high to me, but it's okay.
We haven't really done any investigation because the board hasn't. We haven't met on that subject yet, so that's a good, you know,
that's
maybe a little high, maybe,
issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Well, Chris put some paint on it.
Come on, Chris.
Good luck. Mow the grass.
Okay.
Okay.
So I think capital plan perspective.
So what do we got?
We're going to need to tighten our belts in the future unless we go out for more money.
Even if we go out for more money,
even if we do.
This is really just showing that we really can't go out for more money without really potentially taking on some risk that if the CPI isn't at that 2%, I would not feel comfortable risking that, and that we'd be forced to take money out of our general fund to make a bond payment.
In theory, I'm not saying I recommend this, but in theory, we could do referendum debt for Chris's garage.
Yeah, right. People don't know.
I feel like I like the branding there.
Might be a hard one to sell.
I think it would be hard to sell.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe we.
For example, something
is referendum for lakefront.
Yeah, something happened with the lakefront or the slope. You know, it's stuff like that is something that's very near dear to Glencoe. That's would disrupt the quality of life in Glencoe.
Right.
That is more
a
referendum item. Kind of save those referendum items for the something that's like really if something would happen to the beach.
I'm suggesting though, if you go out to fiscal year 25-26, we could do several million dollars for the referendum debt without increasing people's tax levy because the TAKIF debt would be rolling off.
Exactly, and that's when we'd want to do it so that they wouldn't feel increased, it would just stay the same, and that's the ideal time to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
On page 15, this goes back at that $3.875 million issue at 3.5%. So because we're not issuing today, we're using a rate that is a lot higher than what we think it would be otherwise. It's probably it's sub three at this point. But again, we're always trying to be conservative in what we present. So that actual amount is even going to be larger than the 3.875 to produce the pro forma debt service that's shown here. And notice in that final column to the right, remaining DSEB headroom. Mm-hmm. We show nothing negative there. If you never grow again in your CPI, in your debt service extension base, in other words, you're okay. Mm-hmm. Because you have not anticipated that CPI. And back to Carol's point, she's not going to have to write a check out of the general fund because you were getting a little bit over your skis. Mm-hmm. You're as conservative as you possibly could be. Now, what does this mean, though? It means that you're never going to issue a bond in levy year 2022 for $11,000. So you're going to likely leave that on the table, so to speak, which is fine. You've left a lot of money on the table, so to speak. It's a positive, not a negative, in past years. But you know, when you do this type of a bond, you know, you're going to get out only probably till about levy year 2026. We have $35,000 available, and that's the point at which you might consider the next non-referendum bond. So, and then it's all going to be dependent on how CPI is along the way. Mm-hmm. But what this schedule is showing you is, it back to the point from before, $3.875 million, 20 years are consumed. The statutory maximum is 25, and went up 20 here. So 20 consumes an awful lot of your resources from that part of the house. Mm-hmm. And that $3.457 million of remaining debt service extension base headroom, a little deceiving because it really comes in those last 5 years especially. So you're waiting an awfully long time to access that.
Going back to, I think I'm confused on the answer. When the 2015 bond rolls off in 2025, you're saying then we could do another limited bond, not a referendum, or both? Or
you could actually do a limited bond even today, because you have the room there. The 2015 bond is in a separate, call it bucket, if you will, that we don't evaluate that at all.
Well, but beyond the 3.8 that's in here,
mm-hmm.
we couldn't do any more of the limited until 2026? Or
you could, but you're taking on the risk, I think, is that's what she's...
You could, you... So you could do a limited bond at any point.
Mm-hmm.
Up to 5.1.
Up to the 5.1 million,
right.
Correct?
Thank okay.
You. That's that. We've shown here, 3.875 million mm-hmm. is the solution that we're at least presenting right now. You could do that at any point. So I have this actually being done this year.
Mm-hmm.
And notice how next year, levy year 19, you're consuming a part of that remaining balance, remaining headroom that's available to you.
Right. Mm-hmm. But once we issue this, if we issue the 3.875, you can't an outgoing offer, but then you can't reissue.
You can, but
more.
There's issuance costs involved with that as well. So you really need to take a look at. I guess we would know what the CPI would be at that point in time, but then you're going basically through the same series of expenses to issue debt again.
Yeah, right.
Do you know, because
right.
what would you estimate
yes.
on the 3.875% the closing costs and issuance costs?
It's about 1.25% would be a fair evaluation to get us out of the box with. That's what we. That was we actually. I think it was 1.1% for the 15s.
Not that much.
So, but that was for a larger value.
Right.
So we're going to have a little bit of a.
And
percentage
we do,
break there.
We could use the fund balance reserve in the bond and interest fund and pay for those.
Mm.
I know a lot of times it's rolled into it, but we could just.
That's what this assumes, by the way.
Okay.
Assumes that it's rolled in.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So ideally, you don't want to. You want to do them at the minimum every 5, or the maximum every 5 years, because you're paying all the costs associated with it.
So let's go back to the.
Yeah, you want to do big ones. That's what you want to end up doing, right? You want to do.
Yeah.
A few big ones.
So if we examine the characteristics of highly rated park districts, most of my clients issue every 3 years. Mm-hmm. Why is that? Well, you have 3 years to spend it down in order for it to be adjudged tax exempt. And so that is a nice cycle, right? And then projects roll. Well, for you, 3 years, your next 3 years, only, I'm taking a look at that middle column, debt service extension base headroom. So we have about $725,000 there. That's not a lot of money to issue now, and then 3 years from now, you'd be able to refresh that. That's another approach. Mm-hmm. But does that address funding the capital projects as they are going to be incurred?
Plus you pay a lot higher issuance costs.
You're going to pay more issuance costs for sure, and you're going to subject yourself to interest rate, both risk that is higher and reward that is lower.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, the actual, I would question the opposite. Why would you do something under the 5.1? Why would you do something under the 5.1 cap? Why wouldn't you just do 5.1?
You don't have the, well, unless you went out the full 25 years, you don't have the ability to levy it. Depending on where rates go, so.
But if the rates are at sort of all time lows and you're at this AAA rating, I'm trying to figure out why you wouldn't do that. What's the math that I'm missing here that would say you should not issue 3.875?
Well, it's kind of that risk. It's we can only levy 273. So if the payment related to the debt on that is going to be more than 273.
Yeah. Okay.
It's going to come from somewhere.
And that comes from the CPI. It comes from unknown CPI limits.
Right.
Which okay. So you're building in.
So
we're
building in that conservative.
Mm-hmm.
What we know right now is that annual debt service is at 273. That's what we're using. Right.
Is that where the 3.75 came from? The 3.75 came from your cap of 5.1. Going conservative, understanding where your CPI is. What can we reasonably expect? Minimize risk. I hate when you say no risk, by the way, because there's always risk.
So if the interest rate went down because you're using 3.5, say it was 3, you could probably do overfill at 4.
Yeah. And you would.
Yeah. Right. So he's being conservative in what he's showing.
I missed the math on, well, I got it now, but I missed the math that you started with that 5.1 and worked your way back. Okay.
Yeah, the 5.1 though is a hard stop.
Yeah.
If you would.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So you want to?
I want to just circle back. I want to make sure that you got the point, and I also don't want to belabor it if you already did. But the TCIF debt, the referendum debt, is a completely separate bucket. So we could in four or 5 years back for another $6 million or whatever.
Another bond issue.
And that's not subject to these caps that we're talking about.
Because it's referendum.
Right.
Right.
But we would have to get it approved by.
You didn't go for approval. Yeah.
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 Correct.
Yeah.
Interesting. My flight is delayed, so.
Okay.
And for other, as we get deeper on into this examination, we just showed one solution here.
Yep.
We would obviously come to you with several, even a 5.1, just to show what that might be and your exposure.
I get why y'all
went that way. That makes sense to me now.
So what does that mean? You know, if you were to avail yourself of 3.875%, what does that mean to the taxpayer? And that's shown on page number 16. So back to those orange bars. Mm-hmm. Notice how that orange bar increased because we now have another levy that's attached. Yeah. So the 257 or the referendum bond stays the same, but the referendum levy, non-referendum levies, pardon me, go up. Mm-hmm. And they're at that flattish level of $68, $69 because again we're assuming no change in the growth patterns of the district. Mm-hmm. And so a flat debt service.
And just to explain the difference, because why is it 31 to 68, is that we would be issuing more debt to take up than that full annual payment, where right now the old Watts debt is only it's a little over $125,000.
Yep. That's correct. So page 17, we've really talked a lot about the three restrictions already. Just in the middle of the page, interest rates, the time of funding, lower interest rates is what we want. Repayment term drives the solution as well, and then the future CPI increases. Right now we're assuming zero in the solutions we've shown here tonight. And then the financing structure, which is, do you wanna, if you were to take this on, would you wanna gradually bring on the debt, or would you wanna do it all at once? This solution that we showed tonight, all at once. So there's lots of different flexibilities here. And then down below, each change in interest rates of 0.25% changes your debt service by $6,300 annually. So we've seen maybe as many as 7 of those, you know, if we were to issue today. So that's $40,000. That's 40 times 20, suddenly you know, you've got $1 million pretty quick. Mm-hmm. And so maybe that value of 3.875 is appreciably higher. And again, this is, you know, very, very, May was we would come into the office and, you know, another 6 basis points lower, and 5 and 4, and here's a 7 and here's a 2, only 2, you know. So. It's been a very, very interesting May. Huh. And then, you know, again, we're covetous of the, we're proud and covetous of that AAA rating. And so the difference between that and your former rating of AA1 is about 8 basis points. What does that mean? About $48,000. So it's not economically, of course we want every $48,000 we can find. Mm-hmm. But it's probably more the institutional pride that drives it more than the economics.
And your closing costs.
And sure, right, exactly. We never want to leave any money on the table.
Right.
But nevertheless, it's probably more institutional. And then page 18 really is just there's a lot of events that have to occur prior to issuance. We're showing this because you don't have a date in mind right now, with a minus 3 months, and that's really about when things kick off. And then I won't go into this in detail, but you do have the hearing that you hold that's shown minus 2.5 months. You call for the bond issuance notification act hearing, and then you conduct it at a regular meeting. By the way, if every single person in Glencoe showed up and didn't want you to issue the bonds, you still have the power as a board to issue them. It's one of the few things that you can do. But
are you suggesting?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A few more for sale signs in the community, but yeah. So, but I know we covered a lot of ground pretty quickly, in 55 minutes. So thank you for your attention. But any questions? Anything to send us back with that you'd like to see? Happy to do it.
That was very clear. I have a good understanding. So.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. He does a good job, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. I have no questions for you. Thank you. It was a good presentation.
Yeah, it was really good.
I do have a question for Carol or Lisa, which is, looking at the timeline here, this is assuming we make a decision now. We're not,
yeah.
Right?
No.
So
I think we've been talking about it for a year and a half. Yeah, and it's
right.
We're heading into another discussion of capital moving forward.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. with the rates low, yeah, it does
right.
add That's, a little yeah. bit of incentive, I guess.
Yeah.
But then you don't want to do it too far in advance for when we're doing the projects that we need the money, but. It's for more discussion as we get into the capital, I think. But, mm-hmm. you know, like you said, the rates are really low now. So.
Well, between the red on the chart that Michael was talking about and yeah. the low interest rates, it's pretty compelling.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
It's a compelling.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
If it wasn't red, it would be compelling, in my opinion.
Right? Exactly.
I mean, you got to strike while the iron's hot.
That's
the
right.
Mm-hmm. But you have to spend money within 3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. That's a good discussion, definitely, which we'll have.
We have
no problem. We have so much infrastructure repair. So, okay. Thank you. Anything else for Eric? Thank you.
Thank really
you.
Good. Thank you so
much.
We'll
talk
some
next time.
Yeah, yeah.
Really good.
Really.
I lifted up the expert.
Thank you for coming tonight.
Thank you.
That's
thank
great
you
to see you. Maybe tomorrow I can see you in morning and evening
yeah.
meeting, too. That would be nice. Thank
good
you.
To see you again.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Nice to meet you.
Thank you.
That's good. He's really good. That's what we wanted. Before going to Campbell Park,
yes,
we need
right.
to talk about that.
All right.
New board members. All right.
Oh, and here we go. We're going to now speak about the Village Tudor Court project and discussion of Park 15N. Lisa, could you please introduce the village manager?
Well, I don't think Phil needs to introduce Phil and Dave Mao from the
yes.
village. Thank you for coming.
Happy to be here.
We invited them to come talk about Tudor Court and a potential partnership in the future and the things that are changing in that area. So I'm going to throw it to you. Do you want me to put up?
We've got a couple of visuals that hopefully will help in this conversation. I don't know.
I was going to do it for Phil. Do you bring snacks?
You want one?
No, but where's I really missed the
chocolatey thing?
No, the fried rice.
Oh God!
Because really?
Oh my God! I really that
where's my fried
that
rice?
That really made me sick. Smelling that made me sick. But there. But he's so cute. So you just
I think you guys all should one day just bring fried rice.
Yeah.
We can call Steve and
then we'd have to FaceTime.
Yeah, we would.
When
he'd have
back
to
for a visit. He should just come in for a batter from the public.
Yeah, and sit there and eat your fried rice.
He did ask me once if I would bring in baked goods.
Oh, really?
Bring them what?
Baked goods.
For you?
I would bring them in because I should
from
bake
Colorado?
At home. And, no, I should bake and then bring them
I
to
thought
the
you
meeting.
Meant baked goods from Colorado.
No,
that would be more interesting.
I should bring baked goods to the meeting.
I never wear a pair of solid socks. So I just get them. This one actually happened to come from
That's
a...
That's cute.
A software vendor that's trying to sell me something that
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know who this company is, but they're trying to sell me something, and I say, I'll take the socks.
My
husband and his partners also always wear weird socks.
Yeah, I never wear.
And compete among themselves.
Never wear a pair of solid socks. Except when I run.
SockTech is a good name for socks.
Yeah. Oh,
I don't know.
Is our computer dead, really?
So I grabbed that four pair.
Really? Jenny. She didn't bring the plug.
She's 12 pairs of socks.
Yeah. Dave and I like to battle back and forth. But it's
you did for Pat 32. You should never say that to a person.
This is a good plan more complicated than technology is fun.
Okay. No, it's a PDF.
Yeah,
so that's why it wants to do
you
it.
You want to blow your laptop?
Sure.
We have an idea.
Technology is fun.
The chart
I want to point out.
The batteries.
I told them. For the battery.
At least the roof is officially off the Jeep for the summer.
All right.
Yeah, doors are coming off on Saturday.
Oh, really? I see. I never took my doors off. I'm a wimp.
That
was a wimp. I want my legs get smushed.
It is kind of funny having
you want an apple? No, thanks.
It's kind of funny having a seat in there, like a looser,
yeah.
And no doors.
Yeah, that is weird.
Counterintuitive.
It is funny. Yeah.
Where are you flying? Where are you going?
Houston.
Oh.
Your flight delayed?
Yeah, it's 11, so that's good.
11, oh, that's not so
good. Yeah, that's 1:30 in the morning, the hotel, sleep. So
I have a lunch at there tomorrow, so.
Oh.
It's actually.
Do you guys all have
perfect.
That?
Oh, thanks. I think everyone does on the board.
Yeah, providing it's delayed and not canceled.
Really
we don't cancel flights.
Do you need a copy?
Absolutely.
Wait, United doesn't cancel flights?
We're just going to work off of that.
It's delayed 23 hours.
Unless we're not our friends.
It's absolutely not working? Oh.
Well, we have both. Yeah.
Do we not have a cord?
We're just going to sit awkwardly instead of stand awkwardly.
Yeah, there you go.
You can sit so awkward.
Eric was sitting awkwardly, so.
It worked.
It worked fine. All right. I'm going to stare.
Nice and cozy.
Lisa with you. If you could, right there. I've seen it many times. So. Mm-hmm. So we are good.
There you go, yeah. The last 4 years here, but.
Okay. All right. Go.
Thank you, first of all, for asking us to talk a little bit this evening. Tudor Court has been a discussion point officially, in terms of this project, just under 2 years, but goes back a bit further than that with the discussions that started back in 2014 on the Plan Commission relative to the village's downtown plan. So Tudor Court, during that discussion and in what was finalized in the final report of the Plan Commission in late 2016, was kind of spotlighted as a special place in the downtown, owing to some degree to the fact that Writers Theatre was constructing its new theater center on Tudor Court, but also I think acknowledging the fact that a lot of people have spent a decent amount, anyone with kids in this community has spent a decent amount of time on Tudor Court, whether they've gone to Writers Theatre or not, thanks in no small part to Friends Park. And so as we embarked upon some of the recommendations that came from the downtown plan, Tudor Court was one of the first ones that we've spent some appreciable time. There have been almost 10, I think 11 meetings, either between the stakeholder task force, which was set up back in July of 2017, and Lisa Shepherd was on that task force and spent a lot of time with us walking that site and talking quite a bit with Tesca Associates, who are our planning consultants on this project. And then a number of meetings with our village board in over the last, really the last year, as we have worked to finalize this plan. So what you see before you is essentially the last conceptual site plan that we discussed with the village board back in March. It is, for all intents and purposes, the design that we are pursuing. We are finalizing bid documents, and we anticipate those bid documents are going to be going out onto the street sometime later in June to proceed with this project in late summer, early fall, with the expectation that we're done prior to snow falling. And what I wanted to do, and then Dave's going to talk a little bit about some of the logistics, was just walk you through a bit of what the plan is intending to do. As we work our way from west to east, that's probably going to be the easiest way to look at this plan. Obviously, a component of what we're going to talk about in a little bit is Park 15N. But obviously, Friends Park exists at the western extent of Tudor Court. One of the goals of this plan early on was to ensure that we did not negatively impact parking in any way. And so we have maintained the same number of parking spaces on Tudor Court if you include the parking spaces that currently exist on Glencoe Drive. And as we move to the east, we'll talk a bit about Glencoe Drive as well. But what you essentially see here is a continuation of the downtown streetscape treatment with a couple of enhancements, adding quite a bit of pedestrian scale lighting, adding quite a bit of seating that currently doesn't exist at all on Tudor Court, and making sure that we're creating a safe space for pedestrians and vehicular traffic at the same time. And one of those goals was to do a much better job of highlighting pedestrian crossings throughout this relatively short street, that takes a lot of pedestrian traffic. So you see an enhanced crosswalk at essentially the Vernon and Tudor Court intersection, a significantly enhanced mid-block crossing essentially at the front door of Writers Theater, and then another enhanced crosswalk all the way at the far eastern extent of the project.
Do it now, have it on the big screen if anybody wants to look up there.
Yes, and it is helpful to be able to look. A couple of things that we have talked a great deal about but have not finalized that relate to this project is the walkway that currently exists immediately to the west of the BMO Harris three-lane drive-through. One of the things that was discussed with the Plan Commission during the downtown plan process was how we would like to see that be enhanced in some way, not just for the fact that it's kind of dark and dingy right now, but in the near future, are three drive-through lanes going to be necessary? Is there a way for us to be working with the bank to reduce the number of drive-through lanes to enhance kind of that connection, that physical connection between Park Avenue and Tudor Court? We had dialogues with BMO Harris, long discussions that didn't get us very far. They were interested in talking to us. They attended one stakeholder task force meeting, and then they started to tell us they were marketing the building. And actually, that building has sold, and BMO Harris is no longer the owner of that space. We have made contact with the new owner to try to re-engage on this project, on this aspect of the project. We do have some design elements that have been integrated, and our hope is that as we move forward, or as they get a little bit more comfortable in understanding what their long-term plans with that building are, that we may be able to see some enhancements between Tudor and Park Avenue.
So just real quick, yeah. BMO will be a tenant. Who's the owner?
It's a relatively small scale property manager based in Winnetka. So not any of the big names that we've mm-hmm. heard that are buying up most of Winnetka's business districts or anything like that. Just an interested party who's investing and doesn't have any other investments in Glencoe. So we look forward to continuing a conversation with them. As you continue to move to the west, you may notice a bit of a widening of Tudor Court as you approach Green Bay Road, excuse me, east, as you approach Green Bay Road. That is for a couple of reasons. One of them is to perhaps create what could be an event space on Tudor Court. That was one of the goals that was discussed as part of the downtown plan. And the other was to essentially make that end of the street feel a little bit differently, because one important aspect that was discussed at length and ultimately recommended both by the task force and by our consultants and all people who've been engaged in this is the dead ending of Glencoe Drive mm-hmm. and kind of the reunification of that Park District property that exists on either side of Glencoe Drive and frankly exists underneath Glencoe Drive. It is one of those anomalies of an era where a public street, including the utilities that exist below that public street, were constructed on Park District property. Why that happened, we're still not sure. But most of Glencoe Drive actually exists on Park District property as opposed to village property, so that's an unusual circumstance
for a public street. Orient myself, Glencoe Drive today currently goes all the way through, and you can take a left on Tudor Court and then access Green Bay.
So it's a one-way
street. And so the proposition is to make Glencoe Drive into a dead end.
A dead end, yes, exactly. Yeah. And there are about eight residential properties on Glencoe Drive.
They will be thrilled to have kids.
And they have actually been the
biggest drivers for the concept.
I cannot imagine how they would be anything.
Yeah, it's not an ideal roadway when you talk about walking because it's a one-way street. It's not, you don't feel the safest if you are traveling, if you're walking southbound.
Yeah.
Lisa and Dave and I met with one of the neighbors who actually ended up being on the task force a couple of years ago, talking about how or if a sidewalk could be added in that area. Yeah. There isn't an easy way to do it. This actually solves a significant portion of their concern.
The only negative to it is it's the it's how everyone gets home to the right of the train station, right?
Yep. So. Yes. Although I will say we're evaluating the no left turn out of the train station parking lot and whether that
I would appreciate that evaluation.
We're not quite sure.
So people turn left, people turn right on Green Bay and take a left on Glencoe.
Yes. Swing under Glencoe.
Yeah. Swing.
Yeah. So that's been a that is certainly Glencoe Drive has become the cut through, which is what
why
the
neighbors
are concerned by.
Quick question on Glencoe Drive. I don't know. I remember hearing this, but the city doesn't service that street.
We do. Oh, it's a public street.
Okay. Yeah. For some reason, I thought the homeowners had to pay.
There are some private streets in town. That's not one of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. This makes sense now.
An aspect of the plan that has been under conversation really since we started this conversation again in July of 2017 is how might, with the dead ending of Glencoe Drive, that reunification of Park 15N be best handled and managed. When we commenced our discussions, we early on said, we're not going to get into design of that park. That's a conversation for a later date with the park district. It's park district property. We don't want to presume. And that was, I think, something that has brought us to some degree to this conversation tonight. A couple of points I want to make before we dive into that part of the discussion is one of the things that we want to memorialize as part of this is also a review of proper easements between the village and the park district. We have, as you can see, on the north end of the northeast end of Tudor Court. You don't have a before and after shot, but if you're following the sidewalk from west to east, you notice the sidewalk jogs up, as I mentioned before, about 5 feet, and extends further into the park area. In some cases, actually extends into what is now the street, what is now Glencoe Drive. What we know in that general vicinity is that is Park District property. We are proposing to make these improvements, but I believe it's important for us to consider memorializing that through an easement process. Also, as we look at, and you can't really see it on this, there's kind of a bulb at the end of Glencoe Drive now that is going to extend further east than the current width of the roadway. That's another area where we may want to talk about easements. And ultimately, on the far west end, near Friends Park, this is probably a lesser concern overall. Part of the plan is proposing to remove what is a current small concrete curved line that was actually improved by Writers Theater when they built their building and then continues almost to the park entry point there at the corner of Tudor and Vernon. That is proposed to be removed and replaced with a, I believe it's an 18-inch small concrete retaining wall upon which some benches are going to be placed. So what we are trying to do is create seating without infringing upon the width of the sidewalk. The sidewalk's relatively narrow there, plus you have vehicular overhang with the front of cars that are parked in those semi-angle spaces. So placing those benches on top of that retaining wall still provides the opportunity for seating, but doesn't narrow the width of that sidewalk quite as much. This is, again, intended to be something that makes people feel safe and inviting. Tudor, we envision remaining a pretty hot spot in downtown thanks to Writers. They're seeing anywhere from 70 to 80,000 people a year walking through their doors. Tudor Court is long for the world in terms of needing the improvements that that we're going to make and we need to make. And so these are really kind of a long time coming, and I think we're excited about it. We had, and Bobby, now that that computer works, we may want to pull up, we have another kind of a plan view that Dave was going to talk from to elaborate on some of the things that I was mentioning.
What is it?
It's on that thumb drive that I gave you. In the and there's a file called Tutor Court on that thumb drive.
Which one is it? Layout plan?
Streetscape? Not the streetscape, the layout plan. Yep, that's it.
Got it?
Yeah. So it's a plan view. It gives us a little bit of a better sense, particularly as it relates to 15N to the east.
Anything you want to zoom out?
You may want to zoom in a little bit on that. On that area, yeah. Dave, do you want to describe the streetscape improvements and then some of the?
Sure. So, in addition to the the typical bricks and mortar, the grinding and resurfacing of the Tudor Court pavement, which is 20 years old, is long overdue. We will be removing and replacing all the concrete curb and gutter, all the existing. Tumbled clay pavers are repurposed, reused, and we're going through this process in other areas of the downtown, but that paver material has held up extremely well. We'll supplement and replace some of the stained and cracked brick, but for the most part reuse all those pavers. But then there's expanded areas, as Phil noted, with the realignment on the eastern half to create not only a larger pavement area for future community event type uses, but also to facilitate a drop-off. Currently, if you've been to the theater, the drop-off is a left wheel to curb drop on the north side of the roadway, which is a little atypical to discharge passengers in a vehicle into a travel lane. The three elongated spaces there, essentially just north of the BMO Harris Bank, that are east of this mid-block crossing, that'll be the drop-off area. And on evenings during performances, those will not be open for parking. So that mid-block crossing will be the point that patrons and pedestrians will cross Tudor. It'll draw more attention to it. We're also looking at kind of an innovative approach to put some LED lighting in the crosswalk on the two concrete bands on either side. The crosswalk material is going to be different than bituminous asphalt. It'll be heavier duty concrete pavers to complement the clay pavers that are in the sidewalk areas. So just to draw more attention, that's a special location, but not only for pedestrians, but kind of the entrance to the north side to the theater. And then that same treatment will be used to the much narrower extent to the crosswalks on the east and the west ends.
One thing to point out with respect to that mid-block crossing, we're actually narrowing the time, the distance that a pedestrian is in the roadway by about 15 feet.
Yes, yeah, the bump out on the north side of the street there is typical to other bump outs in the downtown where it serves multiple purposes. It provides a streetscape ability for streetscape enhancement, landscaping enhancement, but it also narrows your pedestrian exposure to get across a roadway instead of crossing 40 feet of pavement there. It's going to be reduced by by a 15-foot parking lane. And we've used that same engineering design elsewhere in the downtown with good results. A couple of the features, there's a lot of additional lighting, pedestrian scale lighting that's going to be incorporated with new decorative LED bollards, LED lighting under the seating and the west end, in the under the wall on this east end, where you see the three old dark ovals there on the north side. Those are kind of raised bed benches that are kind of freeform, with the wood slab bench tops that are kind of creating some areas there for gathering. Maybe more of an adult complement to the Friends Park use on the west end of Tudor Court. One of the things that we heard from our friends on Glencore Drive and we think has a lot of merit is, while they're completely supportive of the termination of Glencore Drive, they requested we consider some pedestrian passageway through there. So we're going to, not knowing the long-term plans for Park 15N, you see a configuration through there. We'll probably carry the pavers through, just a simple pedestrian walkway that can be used year-round.
And it proceeds up north from that area that bows in. Bobby, if you want to pull that down just slightly.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bobby. We didn't choreograph this with him, but he's
doing a great job.
Partner.
You're going to continue the pavers through there to make that.
We're thinking partly because it's an easy material. If whatever ultimately happens with 15M, we could repurpose those, or we could build off of it.
True.
But to go in there with a rigid pavement, asphalt or concrete would not be as appropriate.
Yeah.
Other people, not just from that street, that cut through that way, I think that's a nice
thing. It allows them to get off of Green Bay Road. Yeah. And
But Green Bay Road has a sidewalk and Glencore Drive doesn't, they'd be exiting into a road. How is that a good idea?
But a dead end road. Yeah, I think that the traffic volumes on Glencore Drive are going to drop.
When we dead end it, it becomes a two-way. What we should mention is we had that experience for the 20 months of the Writers Theater construction, where we closed it off and it worked without a hitch, and we got strong positive feedback from the residents even during that time.
And that's only 8 houses, so I don't think that's a significant population that's going to be using. But if we're talking about people from the train, they're using it as a desire path, maybe?
No one's going to walk up from the train.
I can't even get them to use the crosswalk we put on Green Bay Road, so they're going to be in the shortest distance.
That's a scary
And we'll swap back to the other view in a second, but what you'll see is, yes, we added that pedestrian refuge island on Green Bay Road about 3-4 years ago now. The idea, I think, in the long term, once we evolve this to look at design for Park 15N, would be to create a pedestrian walkway that would connect directly to that crosswalk
so that
people could make their way.
They sort of see that there's a way out,
right? Yeah.
Because it's
kind
of scary.
But that's in future park development.
Yes, yeah.
So
totally get it.
Short,
but I think that makes sense. Yeah.
Out of respect to the homeowners on that street, because you are changing their way of life a little. So.
We would dramatically
It sounds like
change.
They want
yeah,
to.
I mean, yeah. Uh-huh. You are.
They should have access.
It's an improvement. It's an improvement to me.
I mean, their property value is going to go up probably 5 or 10% because of something like this. Right? You live on a dead-end street.
Yes.
You're
net positive for everybody.
It's a net positive for the folks there.
I mean, Tudor Court is obviously remaining one way.
Correct, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. We did look, I will say, early on in the process, we talked about the feasibility of perhaps reversing the traffic flow on a Tudor and making it a east to west traffic flow.
For the right hand drop off at Writers Theater.
The problem with it is it screws up the traffic flow for the rest of the downtown.
Yeah.
Well, we also have a conflict with the left turn lane for Southbound Green Bay Road.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Right.
So that's kind of an overview of the streetscape components. We're as Phil indicated, these are essentially we're at the 50% design drawing stage, on a rapid pace to have this out on the street here in 2 weeks with bids back and right before the 4th and have an award in July. So then we begin the fun part and we begin to try to schedule how we're going to build this while, you know, just a few folks attend the Writers Theater.
Yeah. Well, they have the small performances. Two of their largest performances in a long time in terms of the crowds that they intend to draw. Though we have had this conversation with writers now, ongoing for pretty much since they've opened the building, that Tudor Court is going to get reconstructed. The work is going to have to happen. We just hope for dry weather when that begins, and the phasing plan. That's
got
to be
fairly complex. Yeah, phasing plan that will keep, for the most part, keep it open to through traffic, and might move some parking options around in the short term. But it's not an extremely large amount of work. It's just there's a lot of specialty and detail work. So we're anxious to receive bids and see where we're at.
To point one of the things that David mentioned, if you're familiar with the front of Writers Theater along the sidewalk, they have what looks like a bunch of stones stacked in a waterfall a style. That's part of their stormwater management design
system. Yeah.
At the base of that is a seat wall with an LED light that runs underneath it and floods the sidewalk.
Right.
Dave mentioned it, but just to underscore it, you see that kind of articulating wall that exists on the east side of Writers, and there will be that matching wall I was talking a little bit about before to the west of Writers. We anticipate having that same treatment, that same LED lighting treatment, all the way along that that north side of Tudor Court to build that uniform look to it, but really to provide a very different pedestrian experience than exists today. Mm-hmm. Part of what we continue to hear over and over again is that Tudor Court's dark, nobody enjoys being there, they're there and then they run off as quickly as they can. The hope is that this makes that pedestrian experience much more safe feeling. But also, if we do move down the path of concerts or something of that nature at the end of Tudor Court on a regular summertime schedule, that you also now have created something that makes a crowd feel safe if they're in that space. We're going to maintain essentially the same design overhead lighting. I will say we looked at several different, much more intense options for this. One that included overhead festoon lighting over much of Tudor Court. It was pretty darn massive and not inexpensive and a little bit scary to people when they saw it in rendering. So the village board stepped a little bit away from that. As you may have noticed in the future improvements on the walkway between Park and Tudor, I do think we would like to see a festoon application there on a much smaller scale than what we were looking at over the street. The problem with the street is that it needed to be tall enough to accommodate the delivery trucks that are often using Tudor Court, and when you did that, you essentially created obelisks to hold these things up 20 plus feet in the air, and it was a little bit overwhelming when we looked at it. The other thing that fell to the cutting room floor was a concept that was envisioned in that one indented area at the furthest east of the plan that would have accommodated two custom trellis swings that would have accommodated 3 to 4 people on fairly, again, extensive metal-worked custom trellises, pergola-style trellises. Cost and, frankly, attractive nuisance nature of those knock those out of contention as well. I have a feeling you probably don't mind that all that much either, particularly since they'd likely be.
I don't know, we like swings.
I think one part does for an orange exercise.
They're pretty big.
My eyes.
We could still put them in the park.
They could. And that may be something that in a future design in 15N, there could be a vantage point. That might be a good transition into that conversation.
Yeah.
Lisa and I have had a number of conversations all the way back to even before the downtown plan was finalized about this area. And There were conversations, certainly, as Writers Theater was contemplating building their building here, about what that park might be, what it might look like. As we commenced the Tudor Court discussions, as I mentioned before, we kind of said, look, Park 15N is going to be something that we deal with in the future with the park district. We're not going to delve into design right now. But as we continued down the path and as we've kind of finalized the design of what the streetscape itself looks like, there was, I think, a point at which we started to say there is a reasonable expectation that people are going to have in the community that this be an area that at some point in the future is improved. Whether that's because a donor steps forward or something else, that none of that would be anything that we would be able to envision. But we did talk about, Lisa and I, the concept of talking through what a design process for that park might look like. As we talked about that, I think what we also said was, well, if we're looking at this kind of newly formed square, is there value in also looking north from this area and encompassing the park that exists all the way along Glencoe Drive, between Glencoe Drive and Green Bay Road, to the mouth of Glencoe Drive, you know, almost at Lincoln. And I think there's value certainly in a consolidated approach. Tesca Associates has been, as I said, the design consultants we've been working with. I've had conversations both with Lisa and with them about whether that would be something that would be appropriate. I think it could be, but it's certainly not something that would necessarily be a direction that the park district would want to move. Our interest primarily is that as best as possible, we can convey pedestrian traffic carefully through this area. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned before, with the new pedestrian crosswalk, mid-block crossing that exists from the train station, there's a logical walkway that can be created that would run through a portion of this park. Right now, if you cross there, you're coming south to Tudor Court to get to the sidewalk, which functions appropriately. But I think as we are continuing to hope that we're seeing more and more commuter traffic, particularly for the theater, it would be nice to be able to have a more unified pedestrian walkway. A piece of this that's come up a couple of times in these discussions is, could there be some sort of a small patio that exists outside of the Writers Theater east wall? The Women's Library Club has articulated some interest in something taking place in these parks. I think there's a little bit of disconnect as to what actually exists from their vantage point. But that being said, I think a likely partnership with Writers Theater would also be logical. And whether the Women's Library Club, which still owns the Writers Theater property and is leased by the theater, whether that would also include them is certainly a possibility too. I think from our perspective, as we kind of barrel toward this project, wanting to just articulate this a bit and dialogue with the park board on your vision. Obviously, you know, this isn't in our budget to do. I don't know that it's in your short term.
Did you just hear last discussion?
Yeah, I mean, really, though.
Your discussion is eerily similar to ours. So I'm not quite sure why that might be, but there's always more desire than ability sometimes. But as we look at this, you know, we're kind of at a point where rationally a conversation should become perhaps a little more serious and a little less conceptual about what next steps could be. And as I said, the village is open to a dialogue about how we might partner together to do something like that. There is a mutual benefit, I think, as I said, with our recently completed active transportation plan that we worked on with you as well, finding clean and easy pedestrian pathways so that whether you're talking about mass transit or you're just talking about where people are trying to get, is something that came to the forefront in that conversation. So I can stop talking and we can answer any questions that you have about our project or any other dialogue that you'd like to engage with us on.
So next up, just so you know, is that we will have to pass an easement for some of those improvements, which I wholly supported during my participation in this because that makes a lot of sense. So we'll just bring an easement, Phil, and I will work that out, and we'll bring it to the board for approval before any construction starts.
Just a note on that, Lisa, that there's a concerted effort being made in the design to work around the existing trees on that south end of that park area. There's a grove of spruce, and further up into the park are some landmark heritage trees. But along that south edge are some spruces that we fully intend to be able to work around.
That's good. We like trees.
Mm-hmm. So can I just ask Phil or Lisa, I don't understand the timing, I guess, of the removal of the street, and what is going to be there.
It's a good question.
We're talking about like, a long-term plan for the park, but obviously there can't just be dirt and weeds there.
What is part of the contract will be, and it's off to the north edge of this plan, will be the termination of the roadway, construction of a formalized, it's not a full cul-de-sac.
We can see the cul-de-sac.
Not a full cul-de-sac, kind of a hammerhead and that's engineered to allow for the size deliveries that Riders Theater needs and for vehicles to be able to turn around at that end of the roadway. The rest of the existing roadway as part of this contract will be fully removed, backfilled with soil, black dirt, and turf, restored with turf, and then the construction of the walkway. So when we're done, it should be natural vegetation on both sides and kind of meld into the green space that's there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that'll all be part of this contract. Mm-hmm. So anything future other than the path that we put in there, anything future that's going to be pretty much a clean slate to do what?
I don't have a clear vision of what. Well, what's in there now is a road. So
it's
turf going to look
for parts of it. Parts of it'll be turf. I think
that's what's mostly there now is turf.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
It would unify. Yeah. It looked like one park. Yeah, it's going to go back to being.
Okay.
Being
nice. There's no trees there, so it'll look a little. It will look like a road was there at some point.
Yeah.
But that's.
And that walkway will replace a portion of where that road, as you kind of, we don't have, again, we don't have a current conditions exhibit to show you, but essentially it proceeds on a small arc to Tudor Court. I would anticipate that walkway as it's designed is going to fall somewhere in the middle of where that roadway exists right now with, as Dave said, the backfilled black dirt and turf replacement. I think it actually, it will look like there was a road there for a little while and as things start to fill back in. But yeah, that is, as Dave said, that's anticipated as part of our contract, the work removal and replacement.
Thanks.
Yeah, that was my same question because ideally, you're looking at an early fall 2019 completion.
Late fall,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So my concern was the same. It's like, is it going to look like this huge undone thing?
No.
Ideally, our timing would match up, but it's not realistically going to.
Right. And actually, segment of pavement will be used in the construction phasing. That'll be allow the contractor. We'll close that roadway off immediately. It'll allow the contractor a place to stage equipment, and so we'll pull that out. That pavement out and restore that toward the tail end of the work.
Yeah.
I'm sure there was so much more that went on before you came. I can't even fathom the number of meetings, the number of people involved. I feel like I got involved at one point. Well, is this a sticker meeting?
Yes, that's right.
A sticker meeting? None of my ideas flew, but whatever. I liked all the expensive stuff that was never going to happen. And I was curious, Dudley, you were very involved in this in the Plan Commission. Is this what you would have hoped would have come out of all of that work?
Yeah, basic idea was the original idea was something called a LUMRIP, which is a shared space where you have cars and bikes and people parking all sharing the same space.
No curbs.
Based on some stuff that they do in Holland, as you know, you get closer to what's feasible in this country and needing to have marked spaces. This still can be a shared use space, and they're, you know, putting design elements into that such that it can be a shared use space. I mean, I can see some kind of event happening there with a few taco trucks and bands and all that stuff. I mean, it's a
good street to close off.
But
yeah.
We didn't, you know, we at the commission, we didn't get down to this level, and I would encourage you to come back and meet with the commission to kind of see what happened to their idea. Mm-hmm. But this is definitely the direction that the commission wanted to go, and was part of the plan itself.
The reality behind it is it's a very complicated right-of-way because it's narrow.
Yeah.
Parking on both sides. We played around with options of flipping, you know, putting half of the parallel spaces on one side and the other half on the other side.
Yeah.
The idea being, how do we slow traffic as it moves through? As you see on this plan, you know, there's a number of bump outs throughout the entirety of it. That's the intent there is to do some traffic calming. Mm-hmm. When you narrow a space, hopefully people slow down. Wanting to make sure the pedestrians feel safe as they're crossing that street, dealing with the drop-off issue at Writers Theater. Those were all kind of the absolutes from early on. And it was, I mean, these projects, as you are well aware, these projects involve a large swath of the community, and the ideas that are generated are often very good, and then as they're kind of refined, you realize, oh, we can't do everything, but we can do something or a variation on something.
Sure.
And I think that's ultimately where the design has evolved to, is to really enhance what Tudor Court looks like and feels like, so that we can do things there. You know, we've talked about, could that be a place where the French Market moves rather than Lime and Green in the future, and you just line the tents up down the middle of the street? That's certainly a possibility as we look into the future. But those are what we wanted to make sure we created was a special place in the downtown, and that's really kind of the exact words out of the downtown plan.
Placemaking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm sure the businesses are happy because this gives them such an upgrade.
Yeah. Oh my God! Oh my goodness!
Yeah, it's really.
I think it looks. I mean, it's hard to really imagine, you know. But I think it looks fantastic. And I know it was a hard-fought battle to get to this. I bet you're almost kind of excited to get this out to bid and get going on it. You guys going to work at the Writers Theater to kind of guide traffic? What do you mean?
Don't be so excited.
We've actually both decided that we're going to valet park.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, you know, it's interesting because when we went through the construction of the theater, there was no great joy either from a logistics perspective. And Tudor Court is just... It's actually a pretty heavily trafficked part of the downtown.
Mm.
We don't often think of it that way, but it is one way, as you're making your loops through the downtown to find a parking space, almost inevitably you're going down Tudor Court at some point.
Mm.
And so we are mindful of the fact that as we move through this construction, that traffic flow may be impacted from time to time. It's not a simple project from Dave's perspective. As he said, there's a lot of finish work here. It's not, let's just grind and resurface the road. We've got new curves. We've got lots of pavers, lots of aspects to it. So that's where the time and effort's going to go in once we're in the ground. But we're excited about it. I think it's really going to be an upgrade. It's one of the areas of the downtown that hasn't really been touched The other being Temple Court to the south, and that's a future conversation that we're not ready to even have yet. But this is really going to be an upgrade. Again, this is where people are coming in the downtown. 80,000 people walking through Writer's Doors every year.
That's right.
It's our front door.
That's right.
And the lighting's really nice because we've all seen everyone darting out on that street.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, it's dark.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in. We appreciate you taking the time.
Well done. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, 30-second break.
Okay, 30-second break.
I have a cap at 9, so let's...
Okay.
Who's at 9?
Okay.
9.
What time is your flight, Mike?
I'm not going to leave at 11. Yeah.
He likes this.
I don't mind.
He's happy about it.
It's an efficient way to operate.
Yeah, we're going to work through that.
It's a very efficient way to go.
As we work through the time of Cerebral, they'll be coordinating with the
I very much disagree with that. Flying at 11 o'clock at night is a
good idea. Well, he's still there, but he also said United never canceled. I said, that's great if the flight was delayed, if they don't cancel. He said, we never cancel flights.
I know
maybe when he's on.
Maybe he's on. They don't cancel it, maybe, right?
I spent the night at LaGuardia due to some canceled United flight. It was really horrible. Really horrible.
LaGuardia than anything else.
Oh my God. Well, the night in an airport. Because I was just in for the day for work, so I had nothing with me. And I was freezing.
You guys were so easy on him. You were all so excited about this project because there was no price tag. You're like, oh, this is great. We love it, you know? I'm like, hey, I wish we could have a meeting like that.
Yeah, I love it.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Talk about your parking your parks garage all you want as long as you never
pay the price. Maybe that's why I'm not big. It's not a bad problem. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Lisa, this is a dirty glass.
Okay, that's perfect. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Take care.
Thanks, Bill. Welcome.
All right.
Alrighty then, let us move on to discussion of categories of service.
I know, this is, let's do this. I put this at the end so, discussion will go fast because we have to be done by night. No, just kidding. Okay, so in our policy, financial policy manual that was approved in October 2017, it requires the board review annually the categories of park district services to determine subsidy of programs. So at the end of this, the categories of service looks like this. It's this back page right here. So when you talk about fees and charges, and I know this comes up every budget year, and I want to do this early. I'm not looking for a decision tonight. We're going to discuss it, and then we're going to bring it back to the next committee meeting also. Just so you know, I'm not looking, oh, let's talk. But this is how the board sets has their fingerprint on how much our fees and charges are by setting what are how we're subsidizing programs or not subsidizing programs. This is where you have your fingerprint on it. So when you talk about, well, who does fees, I set the fees based on the policy that's in this in the policy manual. So just to give you an example, the percentages below each category represent the net achieved after the revenue and the direct expenses are taken out, okay? And that's are calculated. And the net that's left over, the percentage, helps cover all those indirect expenses that are associated with that program. An example of indirect, and they don't necessarily have to come from the same fund, but some example of indirect expenses include our building expenses, lights, heat, air conditioning, custodial, IT, workman's comp, etc. All those things that go into program, our time, Aaron's marketing, Carol's time, everything like that, that is in the budgets, the way we do our budgets, that those programs have to meet those nets. Some programs you'll see a little higher because they take considerably amount more staff time. For example, dance, You go in there, they use the room, there's some dusting of the floor, but they're not like Camp and ELC or Days Off who are maybe using glitter and make a huge mess in the room, just to give you an example. Or, but, you know, dance maybe, it's not floor, but maybe they need a little bit more of help with Aaron. So those indirect expenses have to be calculated in. So this is what we're working towards. I'm going to be totally honest, we didn't have this up to 6 years ago. When I came, I developed this because I wanted more direction on our fees. And we're working to some of these percentages. We're not there. But this is the idea of what we're trying to, what we're working towards slowly. Make sense? So every year we look over this and see if everybody agrees with it. So I thought this was a good time so that we have this discussion before we go into our budget cycle, and so that we can plan when we set our fees appropriately. So any other questions on that before we start? And so some discussion, preliminary discussions on this. Carol, do you have anything to add?
Has this been static since it was created in 2017? Or have you guys made any changes?
We have not made any changes. Perfect. Right. The only change we've made was in the policy, which I indicated in red, which is because we had the fitness center in there, so we added some of that in there, but nothing else has changed. And that's not unusual. I did this in Gurnee, and we didn't change it once in 15 years. You know, it's very, very much common, and these percentages are very much common in the park and rec world. So if you,
some of the programs are not at that, but we're heading towards.
We are totally heading towards that. Yeah, we're not there. So it might be, we might be a little lower, but this is where we want to get to. But we also know that we can't make a big jump in any program, so we slowly build those. Just like we talked to about non-resident fees, we slowly have to build those, so it's not a big jump, and do that. So.
I have a quick comment about 9.0 discounts to other entities.
Yes.
Full time. I know we did switch. It used to be part time and full time. Now it's full time.
Yes.
I think we're ready for the next change. I do not understand why we would offer free passes, not just resident rate passes, but free passes to the hundreds of employees who work for the village, the library, and District 35. I don't think that's standard, and I think it would be a nice gesture to offer beach passes at the resident rate for employees, but not to give them a free pass.
This was news to me. I never seen this before.
You voted on this.
I don't remember ever talking about beach passes.
That was it's been in the policy. That first line has not changed, and it's been a standard operating for since I've been here. Why that ever came about? But
yeah, really, I don't know. Fingerprints are not on that. I
talking about it in terms of fitness area, but I don't remember ever seeing.
This has been.
I was not aware that we did that. I'm just,
yeah, this has been in our policy.
This is a reference point. Just because we give them the passes does not mean that they're using them.
Exactly.
So our usage rate, and I know we could get that. Is very low. I know a lot of park district employees.
I mean,
I could get a beach pass and I would not use it because I don't live here.
Mm-hmm.
So I think traditionally,
and I can tell you why. I think it's more from what I understood from the past is that they look at the people that work at the village or library or District 35. It's more that they're going down there at their lunch hour. And they're not really utilizing the services such as swimming and the bathrooms that much. They go down their lunch and maybe they're taking a walk and they go down there. And it's just a way for them to enjoy that amenity when they're on their lunch hour. Wouldn't you say, Bobby, from your past?
What do other park districts do?
Yeah.
What do other villages do? Like, does Highland Park do this? Does Winnetka do this? Do they give that to? I mean, this is. That's a lot of employees. I'm just wondering, what's the norm? Because this to me was I don't know, maybe I missed it, but I just was not aware of that.
We can look into it. I know Highland Park for residents, it's free, so I assume for employees it's probably free too. It's been through a parking. We could look into what went.
They would have a village sticker and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know when it started. For what? As far as Carol, do you?
Stricter than when I started. Because when I started, we gave it for family.
Yeah, we gave it the whole family.
So has there been any issue that has been brought up where a family person has either abused their privilege or?
No.
So is there any problem to fix?
I don't think that's what it's about.
I don't think so either.
A lot of our residents complain that they have to pay for the beach. Mm-hmm. So it's a premium that we charge our residents. Mm-hmm. And we've had this discussion many times over the past few years. I mean, Highland Park doesn't charge.
Yep.
Winnetka does. I mean, that's a totally different animal. But, you know, I think that's, I was just surprised. I didn't realize we did that. I mean, how many employees is that? And I would like to know what neighboring park districts do, because I just have no idea. And it seems...
It's just your philosophical, it really is just your philosophical. They're another governmental agency. They usually, it's a very low usage. They usually go during lunch hour. It's just totally, it's a, you know, your philosophical.
And I agree, but I think it's
You could bridge, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
You could bridge kind of both sides of the equation, if you will, by saying the individual pass for the employee is fine, but if you want your family pass, then they should pay the resident rate for that, not $15.
They consider the first one. You get a base first fee. First pass is a certain fee, and then each additional is 15. That's what we're doing, is we're considering the free one is the first one, then adding 15. Yeah. So what we can say, if you want additional, the first one is that top price, and then it's 15 additional if you wanted to.
I just think it's the optics of charging our residents and then giving it away for free. And truly, if a lot of people don't take advantage of it, then it isn't such a hardship.
Yeah.
It's totally up to you guys.
If it's an issue, if we've heard residents, because this is a public document, have we heard residents complain about it?
They don't know anything.
They don't know.
Yeah, we didn't even know when we were involved in the discussion.
And then what's the consequence of a takeaway? And we have to think about what that would do. And to me, it's almost like if it isn't, taking things away can tend to have a very negative impact. And I hear the philosophic challenge on resident fees versus non. But taking it away would sort of put this into public light pretty quickly. So just take that into consideration. But I do agree, Stephanie, we should probably see what best practices are.
Well, Winnetka does not offer free, because I have a friend who's a teacher in the Winnetka Public School District, and I happened to ask him today because I was sort of surprised by this. It's interesting you were surprised, and I was surprised by it too, and I asked him, he said they get nothing. So yeah. It's not a standard
a
teacher in Winnetka. Yeah. Yeah.
There also could be, they just don't know that they get it too.
Yeah.
Sometimes that happens.
I think it's worthwhile to do a little bit of benchmarking, but I think we also take into consideration, once we get that benchmarking back, is it worth creating a conversation about this among people who it's going to be a takeaway?
Also, something I didn't realize, which I should have, because I've rented rooms here before. A friend of mine today asked me if they wanted to rent a room here, so I emailed to get the information just in favor of her. And I didn't realize that resident and non-resident rates were the same.
For take-up policy.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a policy, and we don't charge. It's just a historical thing before I get here. But my guess is to the center was underutilized, and they wanted to get draw attention to the building and bring non-residents into the building, because then they'll hopefully sign up our programs, go to our fitness center, and things like that. And we're not getting overwhelmed with resident requests for some of our bigger events, so we have the availability to do that. So residents always have the first right, but we have the availability for non-residents to go. And if we did raise it, you have to look at the cost benefit. So we're getting a lot of bar mitzvahs, which is our big ones on Saturday night, huge events from Northbrook, and those are actually ones that we make the most of our, I guess, net to cover the indirect expenses. If you make that non-resident rate, will they come, or will they choose another thing? So are you trying to get a little bit of money, unless it's a philosophical that you think you should charge it to, in order to you think you're going to get more money from non-residents, they might not just come at all.
I mean, everywhere I go, I'm charged non-resident fees. I pay $1,000 more for camp in Northbrook, which is my choice, but I also know I'm using their facilities and that they're getting a much better deal than I am. Same thing with preschool. So,
and some people do it for some programs and not for other ones. So, for example, we have a list. We do charge non-residents for some of our programs, one of those higher, I guess, the more active programs that are in demand. And then some, for example, adult painting. If we charge a non-resident rate for adult painting, that program may not go for our residents. So it's a disadvantage if we would charge a higher rate for non-residents. Again, it's just a philosophical, if you want, it may hurt us in the end, or it may not, but.
Right. Just, I mean, I know that so many of my friends go to an active community house because even their non-resident rate sometimes is better than ours, depending on the room. But when I go there, I definitely be charged a non-resident rate, which is distinctly higher. So I just think we're doing ourselves a disservice. Have we ever looked at, you know, charging non-residents more? Because at this point, we have a lot of capacity in this building. We've run out of space.
We haven't, because it's a policy that would be for you guys to decide if you want to do that.
We have been running out of capacity. That's what you just...
No, we haven't on... I don't think we've been running on capacity on our Saturday nights rentals. No. It's our programming hours. It's our programming hours that we're running out of space, but our times at nights and weekends, I don't think we've run into capacity issues at all.
It's not being an issue, and we can move people around. And we also use... The bar mitzvahs were moved to Watts this weekend from the beach. So we have a big price difference at the beach for residents and non-residents, because obviously every Friday and Saturday night at the beach is high demand, but this building, we're not at capacity.
But that kind of says something too. If a lot of Northbrook residents are coming here, we're probably underpriced, because bar mitzvahs are very expensive. Mm-hmm. So,
or we have a great facility. So
right, we have a lot of space.
Yeah.
But they are, you know, causing wear and tear on our facility.
Yes. It's again, it's totally up to the board. Yeah. If you guys want us to charge a non-resident, we're following the policy right now. Mm-hmm. I would fight adamantly if you said, I want you to charge a non-resident rate for adult programs. I mean, like, if you want to charge a non-resident rate for this building, I would have no problem with that.
I just think we have to think about how we value things, and if we are giving people passes for just giving them away, we're not valuing what we have. And we're saying to the community, yes, you do pay taxes and you buy a pass, but we also offer these.
It's totally up to you. These are all policies by the board.
Right. So when do we talk about policy?
Well, we can do that.
Committee.
Yeah.
Well, we don't have... No, we have a committee as a whole, so you can talk it at this meeting. You can say, are we doing that now? Exactly, we're talking about it now.
You're chair of that committee.
No, we don't have a...
I just made him. Oh.
We just went to a committee of a whole meeting, because these are pretty important decisions. So what it is say, you know, I guess you would just talk about, are you all in agreement that you want to look at moving to non-resident rates for building rentals, and I would recommend nothing higher than 25% higher.
Or even smaller than, even less than that.
Or like our other one is 20, not to exceed 20. So we would slowly get to that point. So you would say, you know, in the next 5 years, I want you to get to the point where rental rates for non-residents are 20% higher. And then every year we'll add percentage on to get to that point. It's not a good idea to ever jump that high, but that's
and
what we would look
if
at.
If we notice, if we see that there's a detrimental impact on it that's significant, we could adjust or something, but maybe start with something.
Like we're doing at the beach,
Yeah.
So what you're saying is...
The more I think about it, I think it's important that we think about this in the context of Section 11.
I agree.
Right, because if like... I'm not saying it is, but if building rental is a fully subsidized thing, then absolutely non-residents should be paying a different rate.
Right.
Right?
What would you pay for this building?
I'm saying that's right.
Yeah.
So,
right.
But if on the other hand, whatever rate we're charging for this facility is far in excess of what it costs us to operate the facility, and we're not at capacity, then I'm much more comfortable leaving rates where they're at, because we're just generating more contribution margin to cover our costs.
And I get that argument, except what it looks like to residents who do have to pay non-resident rates when they go outside of Glencoe, but they see that people come here and do not have to pay non-resident rates. It's more of an opposite.
I'd be happy to have that discussion with somebody though that says actually we're better off because we're not at capacity. And for assuming that this, you know, what they're telling us is true, which I have no reason to doubt, we're not at capacity. If we're generating significant contribution from those rentals, then we're better off to take them than to discourage people not to come.
Well, we really don't know.
Uh-huh. I mean, we don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. And you know,
we wouldn't know until it happened.
I would be okay to try it as an experiment.
The other one is you don't have to try it as an experiment yet. An intermediate step would be to say, what is the market for these types of facilities, right? If we're offering 20% below what anybody could rent the same facility for in Northbrook, then we probably should increase our prices.
Well, and we should look at Winnetka Community House, look at the non-resident rates, look at Northbrook rates.
And we do.
We do.
We do regularly.
Market is something in between our multi-purpose room and our community hall, mm-hmm. and their price for that is set pretty much perfectly for the Heller Nature Center right in the middle of it. So.
Right.
You can't always take apples to apples because every facility is different, and that's what we have to take in and use our professional judgment. Okay, if they're going to Winnetka Community House and they have a room that's really, it may be 20% higher than ours, but they have different amenities to that room, that's why it's worth 20% higher.
If they have a tenant or if they have a setup, or it's hard to.
Yeah.
I mean, taking off, like, just as a resident, not as a board member, mm-hmm. you know. I want to pay less than a non-resident, and I know that they're using our parking lots and that we just redid, and they're causing rain here in our building, and we're cleaning, and you know, you want to feel that you already paid for this building, so you want that feeling. And really, I know I pay more when I go to other places, and part of the benefit of staying in Glencoe and having it in Glencoe because you get
your residents. Well, and that's what our policy says. Since the facilities, programs, activities are partially subsidized through taxes by residents, non-residents will pay, but we just, in the passive, excluded right. the facilities. So we can add that into it, saying that we'll pay a maximum increase of a fee 20% more than resident rate, with exception, we'll take out the, with exception, and we will take out the take up room rentals out of that exception. I mean,
the other thing that was in there, and I tried to find the packet online, but
it's 6.0.
My emails don't say that way, but anyway. So we don't charge more for non-residents for ice skating.
Oh yeah.
For the passes.
For the passes.
For ice rentals we do, but for the passes we don't.
And the reason is
other ice rinks.
No other ice rink around here charges a non-resident fee, so that's why.
I mean, I know when I go to Winnetka, I pay more than.
For the daily admission.
The one
at Hubbard Woods, or
the one next to the tennis center, Hubbard Woods.
You know, and we wouldn't have to jump to 20 or 25%, whatever the difference is. We could start with
the policy says a maximum increase of 20%, so that lets us build.
Into it, like maybe 10%. See what happens.
Also, 50%, exactly, we know that. That's why it says maximum.
That's 100% true, but a different interpretation of the same language is. If you determine that a 0% premium is warranted based on the market,
right.
or a 5% premium is warranted based on the market, you can set it at that.
Right, exactly.
Or based on the market, you charge more for
non-residents
and the residents go down.
Yeah, that's also true.
On the basis of all of those things, I'd strike the take of room rentals from section 6.0.
Okay.
For the fees I looked at, by the way, just from the Watts report, Centennial and Highland Park and Winnetka just have one standard, and Skokie have one standard rate, adult and child. I'll call them up and I'll ask them.
Or maybe it was the adult and child. It could have been.
Was it class?
It was a special event. So maybe for special events.
Special events, probably.
They charge because it was, yeah.
Yeah, so we, for our classes, we charge a resident and non-resident fee. Mm-hmm. It's just the passes. Mm-hmm. We don't.
Still another one where those, you know, ours are, I think I remember ours were a little bit higher on the daily than
again, that goes back to this, how you mm-hmm. pass this policy,
yep.
because if you're telling us their philosophy might be different, mm-hmm. and you're saying we want you to cover this much of the mm-hmm. the operation, then this is what we're going to look at covering those indirect expenses and keeping in mind the market. But if we're only a dollar off, we might say we need to cover these costs. Operating outside rink is much more expensive than operating inside rink, because the outside rink, it snows and we have to have park staff out there. So you, again, can't compare indoor to outdoor either in the experience.
I will just note on group rentals, one thing, having worked at the beach, if somebody's having a 50-person party, somebody knows who lives in Glencoe, and they have that person call and book the party. It's very hard to prove that. So you get a lot of times where someone will book a family party. There's nothing you could really do. It's a resident booking the party.
Wow.
There's not a lot you can do about it. But
if it's a birthday party, like, and you're signing that contract, they'll put a resident's name on that. Their kid's
birthday.
Oh, people do stuff all the time.
Stephanie, you naive young thing. Look at you.
There's all sorts of things
out
there. That's
really.
Yeah.
Those
a grandparent might live in town or whatever.
Hold on a second. I had it.
It's hard to enforce
that. Okay. Under facility rentals. So that would be when Watts Hockey, when the private group rents a hockey rink, that's under facility rentals, under extra public, right? With 30%?
Yes.
Okay.
So non-resident groups pay more than resident groups?
No, just even residents. It's under, it falls under the facility rentals, right? I can put out take a Watt
rentals. The
direct expenses
for that are really small. It's the fixed overheads that are extremely high.
Mm. So it's considered in there.
Yeah.
Okay, that seems fair.
Okay, Dudley,
I think we ought to have a higher fee for non-residents. Doesn't need to be 50% more or 25% more. I think we should phase it in.
So do you agree with the statement the non-residents would pay a maximum increase of 20% more than resident rates, with exception, and then I phase it in. So, and if you have specific direction, doesn't have to be in the policy, but if you say to me, hey, I would like to see those non-resident rates up to 20% within 5 years, unless you come back and say, hey, this, the market won't bear this type thing.
Can we get numbers from the neighboring partnership so we could see
on which ones?
On what?
Well, definitely rent the community house, because I think that's
hard to do, because it's you're not comparing apples to oranges.
Right.
So what you need to do is this category is the services. This is your job as a board to set this policy, and then it's my job to go back to the staff and say, okay, let's look at the fees and compare, because it would be too hard to come here and sit there and say, oh, we want dollar taken off dollar here. You guys establish the policy, and then I go back and set the fee based on this. And I'm going to look at it. So, for example, if I see Winnetka Community House and we determine that the room is exactly like our beautiful room here in the kitchen, and if it's at if it's meeting the exactly 30%, that's what we're going to set it as. We're not going to move it up to the 40 or whatever. I might err on the low end of whatever this percentage net is on here. So.
And I'm not saying that our rates are out of control. I'm just saying, and I think you guys get this, that we want the residents to feel, or feel that they're coming here and that they're getting a better value than non-residents.
Yeah, I'm always afraid, like, when people call, because this happens to us all the time. It's like they'll call and they'll say, oh, this is your room rental. And then all of a sudden, when they really get their contract, all of a sudden all these other little fees are thrown in there. But the first initial call is like, oh, this one's cheaper. That a lot of people do that to get you in the door. We have a set fee, an hourly fee that we do, and I know you saw it, that we charge, and they can decide. And we actually wait for the rental to call us, and we find out exactly what kind of party they're having, and then we make a quote back to them. Oh. Because what they'll say is, like, I want a party from 3 to 6, and then they go, oh, that's all I want to rent it for. Mm-hmm. And they're not thinking the setup and the cleanup. So we go through them, like, okay, we sit down with them and say, okay, so what and this was talking about the overhead. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what kind of decorations are you doing? What kind of entertainment are you doing? Mm-hmm. So we can judge from there how much setup and how much cleanup they have. Mm-hmm. And then we charge them that, because otherwise they would say, I'm going to come a half hour before and leave a half hour after, and there's no way that they can do their setup and cleanup. So we, so sometimes when people are calling Wadaka Community House, I don't know if they get the full picture. Wow. And I'm not
so
saying
it's
that.
Really,
but
it's really difficult.
It is. Yeah. And staff look at that all the time and look in to make sure we're competitive. That's part of what they do. That's what part of what Emma does.
They watch me around there because their rooms are very different places because they're very different sizes. But they did say, you only can come in half hours for me. But they did give me, and they are a very large range. Mm-hmm. And they, again, are more for non-residents.
Yeah, so I agree with that. So I'll change that on the policy. And then do you want to go back to talking about the, and anything, do you want to change in this categories of services? Does that all look good to you?
So are you talking about just the chart? Or
the chart.
You're talking about the chart.
Yeah, the chart right now.
Yeah, the only change you made over the years that I can think of is you added the fitness center.
Correct.
So mostly subsidized.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Fitness programs, like classes, are more.
Yeah.
But the fitness center, because that when we built it, it was we want, it's almost like a playground. We just want to cover all of our direct expenses.
Sure. And you're comfortable with this?
Yes,
Staff is comfortable with
this.
We
reviewed it, yeah.
And you've gone, okay. And nothing is moving in one direction or another in here? Yeah, okay. Then.
Okay.
I'm fine.
Josh,
anyone have anything else?
Dudley?
Obviously not.
Okay, Stephanie?
I kind of understand it all. And I have questions later.
Okay.
Digest it, but.
Okay. And do we want to think we can go back and get more information on the discounts to other governmental entities? I mean, it may come back that none of them do it, and we've just always done it for history. I mean, wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
That's just something that.
Maybe way back when there was a reciprocal thing where we used to be able to golf.
Yeah.
But that was probably 20 years ago.
Yeah.
No, probably my first time here.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would make more sense if there was something reciprocal.
There's no quid pro quo here.
Yeah.
And I think actually resident rates for family, you treat them like family and they pay resident rates like their family. I think that's also a nice offer to these people. And the data we'd be looking for is how many beach passes last year were given out to this.
I remember the numbers we ran it. The average was one. It was really low. We gave a lot of them out, but the attendance was really low.
Yeah,
where people didn't actually. I get the exact statistics, but it was not.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah. That's good to know.
It's like our fitness center. There's average two employees a day using.
Yeah,
but there's 55.
So it's kind of a feel like our fitness fit, kind of a feel good thing. Wow, that's great. So nice that you do that, and then you don't really actually see.
It's a lot of the worker bee type folks. You know, it's not like the department heads. Or
okay, now I'm feeling super guilty, and now I'm changing my mind.
Oh, God.
I want
no, it's everybody else.
You prefer them to give them free passes all day long, because they're down there, they're going to take care of a situation that comes up.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they would.
They take care of us down there.
Really?
They really do.
It does buy us some goodwill.
It buys us a lot of goodwill, yeah. I have to say it buys us goodwill.
Yeah.
And doesn't cost us anything.
It's a lot of staff.
It does. That's
but
not
again,
true.
They don't. Use it. So well, think about the. Well, actually, I don't know. We use their buildings all the time. That's how I look at. They don't charge us anything. We're using their facilities all the time.
Now I remember we've had this discussion before.
Yeah, we have. So it's kind of like.
And when you said we use it, and everyone's like, yeah,
We use their facilities all the time. They don't charge us. So it's kind of a goodwill. You have to remember the last thing the teachers want to do, I'm going to be honest with you, over their summer break is come and swim with their students. I mean, that's not what teachers do. So it's more like. Now until school ends, and then if they go on their break, which I hardly ever do, or if they go right after school before the kids are out, but they hardly use it. So we're having a long discussion for maybe 1% use it, and it's just
a nice
goodwill.
And it's the second time we've had this discussion, by the way, now that it's all coming back to me. But
I can tell you. I can tell you. I would probably guarantee. I don't want to waste my staff's time. Probably no other community does this. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But Glencoe has had maybe a long time ago. But I don't think anybody does it. But we've had the history of doing this for a long time. And maybe those districts never did. But it's just been we're a small community. We work very closely with all those, and it was a nice thing to give them.
And I also remember that one of the changes is now it's not a beach pass that you pass around to all the people in your neighborhood.
Right.
It's now a pass with an image, so
correct.
You can't just, that isn't
right.
like the neighborhood
Lisa.
Beach
yep.
pass.
That's
and I remember true. That's what tipped it the last time we had this discussion.
Yeah. I mean, if
you weren't here, we were here, you were
right,
not here.
You could just give the token.
Yes.
Because
sometimes we walk out of here and people change their mind, and I haven't changed my mind. I still think it's off, and it's something that we hear about all the time from residents. They really think our rates are very high for the beach, and I just think this is another thing that we could do, you know, give them resident rates, that's fine, but I just don't think this is something that's done.
Yeah, okay.
And I want to note that, you know, people think our high beach fees are very high. We're still at the basic public. We're subsidizing that beach. 0 to 15%. You know, some years are better than others. Last year was a great year. This year,
seriously.
Not so good. So yes, I'll bring this back to the next committee meeting, and you can make a final decision, and then we'll go
fair
to the board.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry.
Well,
go ahead.
I was just going to suggest, because I respectfully disagree with Stephanie. I understand where she's coming from, and if we could get. I would suggest that we just leave the policy as it is, but ask Bobby to document, well, at the end of the summer, how many visits did we have from residents or their families at the beach?
No.
Oh, for these, yeah.
Yeah, because that's really the
employees.
Point for,
employees.
Sorry,
outside
that,
employees.
Yes. Employees. I mean,
district employees.
What you're saying is that we need more data-driven
decisions. Yeah, okay. We're not ready to decide, but I think that would be a valuable piece.
We already offered it for this summer. So.
Yeah, it's already offered
the summer.
So why not wait till after the summer?
We're looking to send you over to their houses, and can we get that pass back, please?
Yeah. Okay, so the only thing I'm going to bring...
17,000, we'll have a conversation.
Yeah.
But if it's 9, we'll...
Okay.
So that's the beach report.
So we'll wait for that, and so I'll bring... The only change I'll bring is the facility... rental rates, to changing that to adding non-residents for now. And then next year we'll revisit. We're going to do this every year, but we'll revisit earlier before we issue the letter out to the agencies to see if we'd like to do that.
Very
that
good.
Sound good?
Yes.
That way everybody can see the data. We'll have actually 2 years of data then because we
that
had last year
helpful.
And this year. So that would help a lot.
Good.
The only other things I have is that I'm sure, hopefully you all saw the IEPD message that came through. If not, the budget is on the governor's desk. There's a couple really good things in there. OSLAD has been funded for this year, and park grants have been funded for this year. So staff is, there's no details on that yet. There's no details of what percentage and things like that, when the funding is. So we'll be looking into both of those and then coming back with a recommendation whether we should apply for either of those. Okay? We did hear that NSSRA had a line item amount in the budget that would go for their facility, so that was really good news. So they'll have some direct funding to help offset the cost of their new facility, which is phenomenal.
Wait, did apply for that.
We did not apply for, remember we pulled it last year because we were, you guys weren't sure if you were going to go ahead with the project.
Right.
Then when we
applied for three different walking trail grants or bike grants, trail grants. We have not applied for OSLAD because it didn't become available. We just found out now. We don't know when the deadline is. We have no details.
Because we already applied for those other grants, that does not.
That does not
keep applying.
We're applying for the OSLAD.
Yeah, correct.
Even though it's the same project, or could be the same project.
It, even though it's the same project, it will not preclude us.
Yeah, we just have to make sure that we have enough.
They, it may come that they're not awarding the grants until we're actually done with the project.
Right.
But based on the fact that we've gone for other grants, it won't preclude going for this grant.
Right. So that's why we have to work on some details of that. So. But that was really good news for the whole park district community that those grants, they what they are seeing is that there's a that we all, especially with the park grants, that we all have infrastructures that are getting old, and that's what the park grant covers, infrastructure projects that maybe our taxpayers can't absorb. So that's a really good one. Yep, doesn't it sound familiar? So we'll be looking at that, and we again, no details have come out or anything like that, so we're going to be watching that very carefully. I just want you to know what's on our radar. So that was good news, along with some other legislations that I'm sure you guys saw in the news, the gas tax, passing marijuana, and so we'll be looking at that, how it affects our employees and what is in the writing in there.
Yeah,
so
that's a whole
other
policy.
That's a whole other policy.
That's
so
a big, that's going to be
in the paper today about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's going to be a big discussion.
So we'll be
we'll no smoking policy in the parks.
Actually, we do have a no smoking. Okay,
no
good. So we're ahead of the curve. So what this, I'm sure, and I haven't read the marijuana bill yet, but it does say that you have to consume it in your house, I believe, just like Colorado. So it shouldn't be a problem in our parks per se. More than it is
per se.
No, but I just want it will affect it, you know, our policies on staff, because right now we have a zero drug policy. So how do you determine if they had marijuana last night or this morning? So we'll be looking at that also.
That was definitely
yep. So there's no testing currently. So. Yep, so it's very interesting. And we were saying that all along. We weren't necessarily proponents of that. So.
Well, that's going to be a big issue for some employees, I would imagine.
Yes.
Employer issue.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's about it, right? Anything else am I missing?
I wish that,
Cocky
brought up an issue.
What?
About the committees, because he travels a lot, and he said that he would really wish that we had committees because he's not going to be able to come to two meetings a month. So we're going to have to kind of...
Well, then the four of you come, we still have a quorum.
Okay.
He would be on committees anyways, and if he was on a committee, that would actually be worse because we maybe not have quorum. So if I have a committee whole and he can't make them, then he told me that he just has to adjust the schedule. He didn't know that there was committee meetings once a month. So regardless, there's going to be committee meetings. It's actually better if it's a committee of the whole. Then we know we make quorum.
I wonder
I just know what he
where this...
He said he would bring it up, and he's not here. So.
I wonder where the communication fell apart when he was vetted by the...
I was very clear about when we had meetings.
Because that's a... You know, that's a failure on you know.
And we've been doing it every 2 months.
Twice a month for the last three years. Yeah. Right.
But I spoke to him about it too and said, you know, if it's an important committee meeting, which I think they're all important because this is where we really do all the work, he can call in.
Definitely.
Providing even if he's on the plane, he can call in.
He can call in, yep.
Right? You can call in.
I don't know if the difference is about having committees, like a personnel committee, because what's the difference?
Well, you can, if you're not a member, you don't feel bad when you're not, if you can't make it, and then when you're doing your scheduling, you say, well, I know I have to make this one. Mm-hmm. That's a personal issue he should talk to you about, but he did raise it to me, so I just said that because it is different than we had it last year where we had specific committees. If, you know, we came, but we didn't have to.
Yeah.
Right.
And now we all have to go to everything.
Right.
But we don't really have to.
No, we just have to have a quorum.
Right.
We just have to have a quorum.
Yeah.
But we pretty much, everybody's coming, all of them anyway, so, you know.
Yeah.
There's only five of us.
I mean, I don't have a travel issue.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Okay, then.
All right.
Uh,
So make a motion to.
I entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second, Dudley.
Okay, Dudley seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passed.